Good afternoon. The time is 12:06 and you're tuned to 89.1 FM WBOI. I'm Sarah D'Elia sitting in for Sean Beeder, who's out sick this afternoon, and in the studio, joined by Sean's usual news review co-host, Bob Kaler. Thank you so much for being here, Bob.
Good to be here.
So let's jump right into today's show, Bob.
Well, today our topic is the proposed same-sex or marriage amendment that is before the House and the House of Representatives, before the General Assembly. It's a short amendment. I'll read the entire thing to you, but its brevity belies its importance. It reads, "Only a marriage between one man and one woman shall be valid or recognized as a marriage in Indiana. A legal status identical or substantially similar to that of marriage for unmarried individuals shall not be valid or recognized." And in order to discuss this at the depth that we think it deserves, we found an advocate for each side that I'm confident will be capable of giving a strenuous defense and a strenuous opposition of this amendment. In favor of the amendment is Micah Clark, the director of the American Family Association of Indiana. Welcome, Micah.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And opposed to it is the longtime editorial page editor for the Journal Gazette, now retired, Larry Hayes.
Hello. Good to be here.
Thank you so much.
Good to be with you, Micah.
And to get started, I'd like to give each of you 2 or 3 minutes to explain why you support and why you oppose this. Let's start with Micah.
Well, let me mention a couple things real quickly. The amendment in Indiana has been an issue for at least 10 years. 31 states have passed amendments defining marriage similarly to this amendment. Another 10, all 41 states have laws defining marriage between a man and a woman. 9 states have same-sex marriage. In Indiana, we are a slow amendment process, which our founders did on purpose, and that's probably a good thing. We don't have a lot of referendums on our ballot like they do in California and a lot of other states. But for amendment to pass, it must pass 2 separately elected chambers of the House, and then it goes to the people for the ultimate decision. We're in the middle of that process. It was passed in 2011 with 70 votes in the House and 40 votes out of 50 in the Senate. It will come up again this spring or next session and then go on the ballot in November of 2014. And the people would be allowed to vote on whether or not they want to solidify our laws, define marriage into the Constitution. And I think that's the proper place for this discussion rather than a judge. I think this is an issue that affects millions of Hoosiers, and I think the people should be allowed to vote on this. And we support the amendment basically because we believe that marriage consists of a man and woman, and that the people need the right to decide this issue rather than having it come up and kind of in our face every few years. And so I'd like to see it on the ballot and see it decided one way or another, and let people decide whether or not moms and dads, husbands and wives, are important and worth protecting for the next generation in the institution of marriage itself.
First, let me lay my cards on the table. I would be delighted for Indiana, even though it's not likely, I would be delighted if Indiana were to become the 10th state to endorse same-sex marriage. We have 9 states that have embraced same-sex marriage, and of course the District of Columbia. But that's sort of where I begin things, and I think it's kind of interesting to me and my perspective of how fast this issue of gay marriage has moved. When I retired from the Journal Gazette 12 years ago, gay marriage was not even an issue. I don't recall ever writing editorials about it, although I certainly would have embraced the idea. To me, for the legislature to dictate the morality of such an issue is really inappropriate. Not that I didn't find a lot of other things that the General Assembly got involved in that I thought would be better left to professionals, say in education. But the problem with this amendment is, first of all, it becomes much more difficult to undo once you make something a constitutional amendment in the state. And certainly if the U.S. Supreme Court does not declare that same-sex marriage is legal, then we're going to have another generation of battling this issue out. And I'm wondering, why is the legislature even injecting itself into this issue? The other thing about HJR 6, the House Joint Resolution 6, is that it precludes a dialogue right now that allows all sides, including Micah's point of view, to have a thorough discussion that seeks to find ways to validate committed relationships for non-traditional couples. As you may have paid attention, figured out here that this not only this particular amendment not only precludes gay marriage but also civil unions, and that interferes with all kinds of practices, policies, laws that have protected people who are in a civil union, whether or not they're homosexual. So for that and a number of other reasons, I think we're back in the 20th century, and instead of catching up with the social mores that seem to be moving so quickly, we already have 53% of the public in support of gay marriage, and to backtrack back to the years when I was a kid, it just doesn't make any sense.
Thank you, Larry.
We want to make sure that we invite folks to add to the conversation with your thoughts and opinions. If you feel strongly one way or another, we'd like to continue the civil conversation that we intend on having today at 260-452-1185. And remember, if you don't feel like picking up the phone, you can always email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm with any thoughts or opinions. And post on our Facebook page is a great way to get in touch with us.
Micah, do you think that the second sentence of the amendment, where it talks about it bars legal statuses that are substantially equivalent to marriage, the thinking is that that would block any consideration of civil unions. Do you think that the amendment is a weaker or a stronger law because of that?
I think it's a stronger law because if you look at other states where they've allowed civil unions, California, Vermont, Massachusetts, other places. Neither side really wants that. Civil unions are more of a step towards same-sex marriage. And what the courts have sometimes looked at is if the state says that marriage is between a man and a woman, but they create this marriage by another name, it really weakens, you know, the argument against same-sex marriage. Homosexuals can live as they choose. They can get civil ceremonies. They can do those types of things. But redefining marriage for all of society, I think, goes too far. And so I think the law should remain as between a man and a woman. One of the things that Larry said that was interesting is his talk about the times changing, and in the last 10 or 20 years, you know, there were no arguments or no editorials on same-sex marriage, and now they're kind of the issue of the day. I think before societies make significant changes like this, and this would be a significant change, you usually have a lot of moral arguments in favor of an issue, and yet there has never been a great moral thinker who has ever advocated for the redefinition of marriage in this way, not Gandhi, not Moses, not the Quran, not the Bible, not Martin Luther King. I don't see this as the same as a great moral change. I think it's actually more of a social experiment. And my concern is, if we say that men and women are interchangeable or the same or that gender doesn't matter, I'm concerned what that would do for children who deserve to have a mother and a father.
Well, I can tell you, from my research over the years, gay couples seem to be as effective and supportive and successful as parents as heterosexual couples. So I don't think that really carries the day. You know, to me, it's still just such an issue of what is basically fair. No matter who is for it or against it, what's right here? And the Indiana Constitution, Section 23, says, "The General Assembly shall not grant to any citizens or class of citizens privileges or immunities which upon the same terms shall not equally belong to all citizens." Now tell me why this amendment is not in violation of this particular section already in the Indiana Constitution. Why single this very tiny group of people, you know, not all homosexual people want to be married in Norway and Sweden, where they have grown to accept pretty much as a matter of fact. You've got people who are getting married, gay, lesbian, and what? It's only 1% of the population, and they're in Swedish papers and Norwegian papers. They're not having editorials for or against. You know, this has become a dead issue. Once you treat people fairly, then we get used to it. Everybody does, and we've seen this. When I was growing up, you go to the grocery store, if you saw a black and a white person together, a couple holding hands, people would have been gawking. Today, I go to Kroger's or Walmart, and I see people who are of a different race, mm-hmm. and they are, nobody pays attention, and it's just commonplace. Now, you mentioned Gandhi and King. Those iconic leaders were certainly ahead of their time in demanding equality. I can't imagine citing Gandhi and King as examples of people who, because they didn't bring up gay marriage, would not have supported that. Mm-hmm. I can't. That is beyond my comprehension. Mm-hmm. I think maybe you better cite some different sources. I would love to see another Gandhi or King, but what about President Obama? He has embraced gay marriage.
Let's give Mike a chance to cite a few sources here. Mike, I'm particularly interested in how you would answer the points that Larry brought up about comparing this to the changing attitudes on this to the changing attitudes in recent decades on interracial marriage and interracial relationships, and question of how this does, how not homosexuals not being able to marry doesn't run counter to equal protection guarantees under the Constitution.
Well, let me start with the last one. The Supreme Court in 1974 in Baker versus Nelson looked at that issue on the 9th and 14th Amendment. Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, and they found that states have a legitimate interest in preserving marriage as between a man and a woman, and they rejected that claim. Indiana's Circuit Court of Appeals, also in Morrison versus Sadler, said that the state has an interest in preserving marriage as between a man and a woman. So they looked at those questions. I'm not an attorney, but they looked at those questions and rejected that. As to the other issue, I don't see that the differences between race are all that significant, yet the differences between a man and a woman are huge. I just don't see how you can compare racial laws from the past prohibiting marriage between a black man and a white woman is the same as preserving marriage between a man and a woman. You know, those racial laws were about keeping people apart. This is about keeping men and women together and saying that mothers and fathers matter, that men and women are different, that both contribute to the raising of a child, to the institution of marriage, that whatever two men may be, they're not a mom. And I think that mothers and fathers are different. Mothers and fathers matter. And I think we shouldn't teach the next generation of children that either mothers or fathers are dispensable or unimportant. I think children are already confused about the messages they receive, and that this law would affirm that marriage between a mother and a father, men and women matter, moms and dads matter.
We have a caller on line one who's going to join our conversation today. Katie, welcome to Midday Matters.
Hi. I was concerned that it seems this would be an injection of discrimination into our Constitution that is a very disturbing step in my mind. And can this be, I look at this as a matter of civil rights, and to take a step of actually legislating into our Constitution a discrimination is I don't think that there is enough hard evidence mm-hmm. to make that be worth
the amen.
That grave of a step.
Uh-huh. Well, let's go to Micah and ask what would you say in response to those comments from our caller.
Well, marriage is nothing new. It has always been the union of a husband and wife. We're not taking away anybody's rights. This is current law now to say that marriage is between a man and a woman. It's always been that way. I think the discrimination arguments hinge upon the idea that men and women are the same. I don't think they're the same. I do think race is a benign trait. Whether or not a child has a black father and a white mother is not really relevant, but whether or not a child has a mother and a father is very relevant. And I think that's why in California, Michigan, I know, and many of the other states, around 60% of African Americans voted for marriage amendments in the 31 states. And I think they see a difference between a sexual lifestyle and a skin color. You know, when someone walks into my office, I know right away whether they're black or Hispanic or male or female. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what they choose to do in the privacy of their bedroom, and I don't think the government should go there. People can live as they choose, but marriage should be between a man and a woman.
Well, I can agree, Micah, about leaving other people everyone to whatever they choose to do in their bedroom. And I think basically that's what we're talking about here. I think we're trying to interfere with people's private lives and dictate to them some moral compunctions and religious views that really don't belong in the legislature and certainly not in our law. I think from the research that I've done over the years, gay couples are just as capable of raising kids, healthy, emotionally mature kids, as heterosexual couples. If you really want to do something about the child rearing, let's focus on abuse. Let's focus on divorce and trying to help people decide to get married after they have developed some maturity. But I think trying to inject social attitudes and mores into people's personal lives is basically what we're talking about. Now, marriage has not always been between one man and one woman. Solomon was reported to have had 700 wives, and you see throughout history an evolution of marriage. It is always changing. And again, going back to Gandhi and King, that wasn't happening when they were leading civil rights. But I think this really is a basic civil right.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple folks on.
Would agree with you, Larry, because if you go to propolygamy.com, the largest polygamy group in the United States, they say polygamy is the next civil rights battle. I think therein lies the problem. Once you go beyond the logical, time-tested boundary of one man and one woman, there's really no stopping point. Whoever wants to get married will be allowed to get married, and that's my concern. If we walk away from the importance of men and women, I think marriage itself takes a hit. I think it becomes less important, and I think society suffers.
So you're saying this is really, excuse me, you're saying this is really about polygamy?
No, you brought up polygamy.
Well, I was just saying, you were claiming earlier that throughout history, this marriage has been between one man and one woman. And clearly, that's not the case.
Well, I don't support polygamy.
It isn't even the case today. Well,
we have a couple of callers that we need to make sure we get to before we take a quick break for the news. So let's head over to John, who's on line two. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. One thing that doesn't seem to be looked at all is the scientific evidence. They pretty well cited, as far as I can tell, that people are born gay.
Sorry about that. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties. Let's just, oh gosh. Okay. Sorry about that. John, I'm sorry that we lost you. Please give us a call back at 260-452-1185, or you can email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm. Sorry again for those technical difficulties. We need to take a quick break for the news or for some local programming here on WBOI, but we'll be back in just a few moments. In the meantime, if you have any thoughts or opinions that you'd like to put together, feel free to send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm, or online at our Facebook page.
Barbra Streisand is one of a very few entertainers who have won it all, an Oscar, Emmy, Grammy, and a Tony Award. She's starring in the new film, The Guilt Trip, along with Seth Rogen. On the next Fresh Air, we look back at a 50-year career that includes hit songs, hit films, and one distinctive voice. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
It's an American Roots Red, Green, and Blue Xmas with favorite holiday tunes from Louis Armstrong, Elvis, and Celia Cruz, plus Yuletide memories from Diana Krall and Solomon Burke. Be ready to bachata, boogie, and second line to celebrate the season. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Sometimes it seems like the news industry is one big runaway train headed way too fast, destination unknown. I'm Robert Siegel. At All Things Considered, we plan our daily voyage carefully and take the time to see the important sights along the way. Don't worry, we'll still get you where you need to go. All Things Considered from NPR News. Enjoy the journey. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Where do you go for rich conversation on the topics that matter most? The radio is more responsive than the water cooler, and we take your calls. I'm Neil Conan. If you're talking about it, we're talking about it. Join us for provocative talk on the issues you really care about. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Welcome back to Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:31. If you'd like to join today's conversation, give us a call at 260-452-1185. Remember, you can always post on our Facebook page or send us an email at middaymatters@nipr.fm. Before the break, we were getting to some phone calls. So, Bob, I think we're going to get back to the phone bank and start answering some new questions. Welcome to the program. Oh, let's see. That person has left the conversation. Before we get on and get way ahead of ourselves, let's backtrack to John, a previous caller who had a question, and he got cut off, but Bob kind of
we lost his call, but I think the gist of where he was going is he wondered how this, how the argument over this is affected by what he said is scientific evidence that people are born gay, a subject which some people still dispute, but what's your read on that, Micah?
Well, there's no conclusive evidence. There's certainly environmental factors. There's other studies have shown people who might be prone to homosexuality have certain traits or tendencies or environmental factors. But what we do know is that children do best with the love of both a mother and a father. And I would say this to what Larry said just a few minutes ago. He said it twice now about homosexual couples who raise children. I would encourage him to look a week ago, Demography Magazine, the head of Stanford University's Department of Sociology, wrote a report or a study that involved 1.6 million children in using data from the U.S. Census Bureau. They studied same-sex households and households with mothers and fathers, married mothers and fathers, and what they found is that children who grew up in a married household with a mom and a dad did 35% better in school than kids who grew up in a with a single-gender household, a homosexual household. So I think there is research out there that shows that children who are raised without a mom and a dad struggle more, have more risks of certain things that we as a society should consider if we're going to unravel marriage and say that mothers and fathers no longer matter.
I'd like Larry to respond to that.
I don't want to be put in the position of arguing that mothers and fathers don't matter. All I'm saying is that the research I've seen over the years has suggested that children can do quite well with same-sex parents. And certainly two good parents are better than one. And in so many cases, children today are raised with one parent. And having been a parent myself, I have two adult children. I can tell you that doing this alone is an awful challenge. And doing it with one other person, whether it is of a different sex or the same sex, is still a challenge. I'm not in a position to dispute Micah's reference, his research, but I've looked at this a lot, I would suggest that these children are doing quite well. And so that is one issue that I think we really need to decide, are we trying to be fair to people who are same-sex, or are we trying to determine how people are going to raise their kids? And you can have children raised in all kinds of weird ways that are not productive for the children. The other thing that again, you put something in the Indiana Constitution that not only abolishes or tries to abolish a same-sex marriage and deny the rights and the privileges of marriage to these folks, but also to persons with civil unions. I mean, where does this end? Where do we stop getting into people's personal lives? Because we may personally think, well, their children would be doing a lot better if they were of a different gender.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, let's stop trying to run everybody else's life. There's plenty of evidence that homosexuality is something that is born in a person. Maybe the proclivities are stronger in some people than others. Maybe all of us have the same range of behavior or attractions. But, you know, whether this is a choice or whether it's something genetic or totally mm-hmm. natural, let's allow people to be themselves, to make their own decisions, their life decisions, to enter into loving relationships.
Mm-hmm. And Larry, I don't mean to cut you off, but we have a lot of folks waiting to chime in here. We're going to go to the phones. Caller, welcome to Midday Matters on WBOI.
Hello.
Hi. Are you there?
Yeah, this is still John.
Okay.
You answered one of my questions. Mm-hmm. I worked with a couple of gay and I'm being cut off again.
Sorry about that, John. Just not having a very good day with the phone banks right now. We apologize. We have a couple of Facebook messages that I'd like to get to because there are a couple of folks that are asking some pertinent questions on Facebook. Will wrote in and said, why wasn't this put on the ballot for public vote like most states that have done this? Or was it, and I just forgot about it already? Is Larry?
That's what we're headed for. Okay. If the General Assembly ratifies the amendment again this year or next year, it'll be on the referendum in 2014.
Okay, good question. A lot of folks still not sure about that exactly. And then we had another email coming in that said, from an anonymous listener that said, as a straight person, I have a hard time with those who oppose gay marriage using the argument that they are protecting the sanctity of marriage or keeping it sacred when so many homosexual people can get divorced or cheat or stay in an abusive relationship. Why does allowing committed same-sex couples to protect their property and celebrate their love openly become a threat to the sanctity of marriage? I would like to think that it would promote the value of committed relationships. Micah, would you like a chance to respond to that email?
Well, I think so much. I have nothing wrong with people who want to pass life insurance or hospital visitations or things like that. I don't think we need to turn marriage upside down in order to do that. You know, I think this discussion keeps going back to the point that, you know, the essential purpose of marriage is to attach mothers and fathers to their children, but so much of this discussion has been looking at this from the adult point of view, and I think we really need to look at what children need for a mom, and I think that is a mom and a dad. I think every child is entitled to a relationship with both parents, but if the law starts to say that a man is and women are interchangeable, that Sally and Steve are the same as Sally and Sue, then Steve doesn't really matter anymore, and the institution weakens. Larry mentioned the first country in the nation to allow same-sex marriage, which was the Netherlands. And what happened there was when they allowed same-sex marriage, cohabitation increased, out-of-wedlock birth increased, marriage rates fell as the institution meant less, and it didn't help stabilize homosexual relationships. There's a study out of that country that found Marriage and Policy Institute found that 50% homosexual couples in Sweden were 50% more likely to divorce than their heterosexual counterparts. Lesbian couples were 167% more likely to divorce. Now, I don't think that we need to change or redefine marriage on the premise that it's going to help two people if we undermine the institution of itself and harm children.
I'm lost here. I don't. It sounds like in the Netherlands, from what your research showed, their divorce rate is comparable to our divorce rate for heterosexuals.
No, that's not what I said. I said homosexual couples were 50% more likely. Homosexual male couples were 50% more likely to divorce. They had a 50% higher divorce rate than the heterosexual couples in Sweden, and lesbian couples were 167% more likely to divorce than their opposite couple heterosexual partners in the Netherlands.
So it
seems divorce rate is higher among homosexual couples in the Netherlands than it is heterosexual couples. But the institute, my bigger concern is that marriage rates have declined, out of wedlock births have increased since they undefined marriage to allow it to be anything two people or three people demand.
But what I'm saying is that when you have high divorce rates in another country with gay couples, it sounds more like the issue is divorce rates. We have one of the highest divorce rates, as I recall, in the world.
I've been working on that for years. I'm opposed to divorce. I want to keep husbands and wives married and have as many successful marriages with a mom and a dad in Indiana as possible.
Well, I think I agree with about 90% of what you just said. it seems to me that the issue is what is fair, what is just, what is... Here we have in the Indiana Constitution, Section 23... you can't grant one group of citizens rights that you're not granting to another group of citizens. But here we are. This is what the legislature is poised to do. And who knows how the referendum would go, assuming that the General Assembly will pass this. But even if the majority of people think this is all right, you know, there are a lot of people in the South, maybe a majority, who during the Civil War believed that slavery was not only right and the right of white people, but they thought that it was endorsed by the Bible.
We have some folks on the line that I'd like to make sure that we get to. I believe we have Corey on. Oh, no, we don't have Corey online, too. Let's see. All right, never mind. We do not. We do have a Facebook comment from Tia, who wrote in saying wanted to hear a little bit more about the idea of men and women being different and how this affects an amendment that could potentially really change things in Indiana. Hearing the idea, the issue that allowing gay marriage is because men and women are so different is an idea that seems potentially dangerous to women's rights. Either we as a nation support the civil rights of all or of no one. Otherwise, we aren't really participating in equality for all. What would you say to that, Larry?
Well, I don't know. I just hate to see us single out one group of people in the country and say, okay, because we don't think that you would be good parents, we're not going to let you get married. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what Micah is saying. We don't trust same-sex parents to be good parents. To be good parents,
mm-hmm.
Therefore they can't get married. You don't want to have them get married. That was your argument,
mm-hmm. Right? They can't marry now.
Well, I mean we're really getting into this whole area of who gets to decide who's going to get married. When I was a student minister, I performed some weddings at the other ministers in the little community where I was a minister refused to perform because these people had been divorced. But I performed the weddings, and I'm telling you, I don't know what happened to them, and I don't know what happened to their children. But the state of Indiana allowed me to perform those ceremonies, and you can't control the future of some family by writing this thing into the Constitution. And I think that's what Micah and his point of view are trying to do. And I just think that is way beyond the competence and the responsibility of the state legislature.
And Micah, would you like a chance to?
Well, yes. I mean, there's so much in there and in the question before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Larry talks as if, and the questioner did as well, as if we're doing something new here. This is nothing new. Same-sex marriage has never been recognized in Indiana. It wouldn't be. This wouldn't change anything with this amendment. 31 states have amendments like this. 41 states have laws defining marriage like Indiana does. Homosexual couples live in all 41 states. It doesn't change how they live. It does say that in order to get married, they have to follow certain guidelines. And Larry thinks that that's somehow unfair if we have a standard for marriage. I think whether policy is fair to every individual cannot be the only question that we ask in this discussion or in establishing public policy. I mean, eyesight standards for pilots are unfair to some very skilled, technically skilled people. Orchestra standards are unfair to some musicians. Driving standards are unfair to some people. But whether or not, wherever there are going to be standards, there are things that are unfair. So the real question is whether we redefine marriage in a new way and one of the most radical ways ever conceived and completely changing its meaning is really good for society. And I don't think it is. I think society knows that whatever else love may be or two homosexuals may be, marriage involves a mom and a dad, a husband and a wife, because men and women are different, and they both bring a unique contribution into the home that while two men may be, you know, good people, they may try to be a good dad, they're not a mom. And when we talk about divorce, those children are still typically attached to their mother and father, and their mother may remarry and bring in another father if the father's gone. So I don't think it's quite the same, and I'm opposed to divorce, too. So it's kind of a different issue than we're talking about. Marriage has been weakened by divorce. We don't need to weaken it further by undefining it.
And we need to take a quick break for the news on WBOI, but we'll be back with more of Midday Matters in just a few moments.
Sometimes it seems like the news industry is one big runaway train headed way too fast, destination unknown. I'm Robert Siegel. At All Things Considered, we plan our daily voyage carefully and take the time to see the important sights along the way. Don't worry, we'll still get you where you need to go. All Things Considered from NPR News. Enjoy the journey. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. The 11 members of the Electoral College from Indiana will meet Monday to formally vote for Mitt Romney as their counterparts across the nation hold their own largely ceremonial gatherings. Romney won Indiana handily, but didn't fare as well elsewhere. The 11 Indiana electors will meet 10 a.m. Monday in the House chamber at the Indiana State House, while their counterparts across the nation will do the same. Federal law requires the nation's electors to gather on the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December to cast their votes, which are then sealed and sent to the President of the U.S. Senate. The 11 electors from Indiana represent 9 congressional districts and 2 at-large electors. In Indiana, electors are chosen at the state conventions of each political party. Police in Fort Wayne say serial thieves may be behind a surge in robberies at banks and credit unions, including one in which employees were bound. Fort Wayne has so far this year seen 15 bank and credit union robberies, or more than in the past 4 years combined. Police say they don't know what's behind the rash of robberies, and they're still piecing together information on the crimes. But Fort Wayne Police Chief Rusty York says there's definitely evidence of serial robbers in the bank heist. He says there's a proportionate number of events that we know are caused by the same individuals. 2 men have been convicted, and 1 is scheduled to stand trial in January in some of the robberies. State Senate Appropriations Chair Luke Kenley says he wants to focus on changing online sales tax laws to be at the federal level and not the state level moving forward. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Kenley has been the state's leader on pushing for greater collection of online sales taxes and serves on a national board calling for uniform sales tax collection. He has previously lobbied for state efforts to collect the taxes, but now he says the sole focus must be on federal legislation.
The Supreme Court has said that Congress has the authority to authorize the states to collect that, and only Congress can do that. So that's why we're working there.
And Kenley says he has hope Congress will act on the issue soon.
And I think we have a chance maybe in 2013 to get a bill passed. We almost got it put into an amendment into a bill this year, just this month.
Kenley says estimates show the state could bring in as much as $400 million in revenue collecting sales tax from online retailers. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And a busy weekend for both the Fort Wayne Comets and the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. WBOY's Doug Gruber has a wrap-up.
The Comets were in Reading, Pennsylvania Friday night, had a comfortable 4-2 lead after two periods, but the Royals scored four unanswered goals in the third period, down the K's 6-4. Saturday night in Wheeling, West Virginia, the Comets took the Nailers into overtime, but Wheeling scored 50 seconds in the overtime period for a 3-2 win over the Comets. Back at the Coliseum Sunday against the Kalamazoo Wings, the K's went into overtime for the second night. This time, the Comets' Daniel Maggio scored on a power play for the Comets' 2-1 win. So three games in three nights and 3 points for the K's. The Fort Wayne Mad Ants were on their way to breaking a four-game losing streak Friday night at the Coliseum. Leading most of the way over the Maine Red Claws, Maine took a one-point lead with 4.5 minutes to go. Fort Wayne turnovers, they had 25 in the game, allowed Maine to take the win 107-104. Saturday night against Springfield, the Mad Ants were down by 5 points after three quarters, but started the fourth quarter with a 12-0 run, broke their five-game losing streak with a 95-85 win over the Armor. For WBOY News, I'm Doug Gruber.
You're listening to 89.1 FM, WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Katie Anderson, and now it's time to get back to Midday Matters with your host, Sarah D'Elia.
Welcome back to the program. We have just about 5 minutes left in today's show, so we want to make sure that we get to as many people as we possibly can today. We have Joel on line four, and we're going to get right to him. We have Micah up, and Joel, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Hi, Micah. I find Stanford study summarized on, or online that says that kids of same-sex couples have the same are just as successful as kids of heterosexual couples in school, especially when you allow for economic and education background. Also, I find that the divorce rate in the United States is 4.1 per 1,000 per year. In the Netherlands, it's 2.1 per 1,000 and hasn't really changed. In Sweden and Norway, it's 2.2 and 2.4 per 1,000. And the divorce rate among gays is no different than it is among heterosexuals. Both of these contradict what Micah said. Would you please explain? And I'll take this off the air.
Sure. Your dad is wrong. If you look online, you'll see that last Tuesday, Demography Magazine released a study, and it showed that children with raised in same-sex households struggled more in education, and the children with a mom and a dad did better in school by about 35%. And it's online. I quoted directly from it. It's a Stanford University study. If you look up Michael J. Rosenfeld, you can find that. And the same is true. I didn't make up these studies. I just quoted from them. But to believe that these studies are not true, you have to basically believe that men and women are not different, that mothers and fathers don't matter, and whether or not a child has a mom or a dad doesn't really matter. And we've seen, especially the last 40 or 50 years, what has happened, particularly in minority communities, as well as the white community, where we see the breakdown of marriage and more kids struggling with crime, with failure to attain in schools. You talk to school teachers about children from single-parent homes versus two-parent homes, and you'll find a huge difference. Now, obviously, many children do fine, and many parents, it's not an indictment of parents. It's an affirmation that mothers and fathers matter. And research study after study shows that moms and dads matter because moms and dads are different, and they both bring unique things into the marriage. I just don't think we should do social experimentation with the institution of the family.
And Larry, would you like a chance to respond?
Well, I just think back of all of the studies that I looked at over the years about how kids in same-sex families are doing, and I just think that the study that the caller cited resonate with the other studies. But
same study I cited, he mentioned the same thing I mentioned. So we're quoting the same study with two different outcomes. He denied the outcome. Here's the truth. There are about 80 studies conducted with same-sex parents looking at children over the last 20 years. Many of those studies contain very small samples. Many of them don't even compare same-sex couples with married moms and dads. They often compare same-sex couples with single moms. Their research, even at that, is flawed. I can send you data on that. Stephen Knock from the University of Virginia studied 79 of these studies and said everyone has a fatal flaw in its methodology. But even those find that children raised in same-sex homes are more likely to question their gender. They're more likely to experiment with drugs. They're more likely to experiment with sexual behavior earlier. And they're more likely to have gender confusion. And the reason for that is moms and dads matter. Both play an important role in the parenting of children.
Well, the studies we've got all over the map, and to decide on what is morally and socially right on the basis of some research studies, when we're talking about people's civil liberties and civil right to decide on whom they want to live with, who they want to be paired with for the rest of their lives through marriage and making that legal. Whether the studies support me or Micah, it just doesn't wash. The thing is, what's fair, what is right, what is just, and this just has to be so crystal clear, and it is to younger people.
What is fair and right to children is a mother and a father, and that's the point that I've been trying to make throughout this conversation. We need to look not at the rights of two people who desire to live together. Anybody can live together. Anybody can have a relationship. People can go get a ceremony and pledge to each other. But we're talking about undefining and changing marriage for all of society based on fewer than 6,000 households.
And Micah, we're actually going to have to leave it there. We've got about 30 seconds left, but thank you so much for being a part of today's program. And thank you so much, Larry,
Thanks, Larry.
This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.